While Cal and Pearlie headed north by northeast toward the small town of Canyon, Smoke took off on a more directly eastern direction, hoping to cut across the trail the kidnappers would have to take to travel from the Sugarloaf to get to Canyon City and then Pueblo. Fall was rapidly changing to winter as chilly winds flowed from Canada down into the area of the Rocky Mountains, occasionally accompanied by glowering skies, overhanging clouds, and intermittent snow flurries. Smoke hoped the snow continued, for it would help him track the band of men who held his wife prisoner. He would have to cross the Sangre de Cristos Mountains to get to Pueblo, but that'd be no problem for Smoke, who knew most of the mountains in Colorado Territory as well as he knew the pastures and features of the Sugarloaf. It took him almost 24 hours of continual riding to arrive at the small village of Silver Cliff, a town built up to supply the many miners in the area with food and mining utensils and such. Like most mining towns, Silver Cliff consisted mainly of saloons, gambling parlors, and a couple of general stores, along with a ramshackle hotel for the miners to stay in when they visited the town to buy supplies and blow off steam from their isolation the rest of the year. All but asleep on his horse after his long journey, Smoke decided he wouldn't be much good to Sally when he found the kidnappers unless he rested. So he got a room in the hotel and asked the proprietor if a hot bath was available.
Yeah, we got a bathtub, mister, but it ain't used much this time of year. Most of the miners don't bathe much between September and April.
Smoke nodded. He knew how that went. When he'd lived up in the mountains with Preacher years before, the man had told him it was plumb unhealthy to bathe more than once or twice a year.
How long will it take to get the water heated?
Oh, about an hour, if I crank up the stove now.
Is there any place in town that serves good food while I wait?
That depends on what you mean by good. If you mean you can eat it without getting poisoned, yeah, there is. If you mean does it taste good, well, that's a different story.
The man came out from behind his counter and walked to the front door. He pointed down the muddy main street toward a small clapboard building at the edge of town, sandwiched in between what appeared to be a whorehouse and a saloon.
That there's called Ma's Place, though if the old lady who runs it were ever a mother, I'd eat my hat.
Smoke glanced at the big regulator clock that hung on the wall behind the counter.
I'll be back an hour for that bath.
I'll have the water hot enough for you to take feathers off a chicken by then.
True to the hotel man's word, almost every table was taken up by miners and workers, eager to have some cooking that they hadn't done themselves for a change. A portly woman in an apron, with hair that hadn't seen a comb in some time, walked up to Smoke.
Table, mister?
The only empty table was in the dead center of the room. Since his gunfighting days, Smoke had made it a practice never to sit with his back to a door or window, or where someone could sit behind him. He glanced over at the corner table and saw that the four men sitting there were finished eating and were talking and smoking over final cups of coffee. He nodded his head toward them.
If it's all the same to you, I'll wait until that table is unoccupied.
Ma looked over at the table, and then she stared back at Smoke. Her eyes fell to how he wore his twin holsters low on his hip, the left-hand gun butt first, and the right hand one butt back.
Oh, so it's like that, is it?
Smoke shrugged. She grinned and stuck out her hand.
My name's Ellie May, but everyone around here just calls me Ma.
I'm Smoke Jensen.
Her eyes widened a bit, showing that even here in this backwater town, she'd heard the name before.
Oh, I'll see what I can do, Mr. Jensen.
Just Smoke.
She smiled, revealing teeth that showed it had been as long since she'd seen a dentist as it had since she'd been to a hairdresser. She went over to the table, leaned over, and said something to the men. As all their heads turned to stare at Smoke, he nodded in a friendly greeting. They hurriedly got to their feet, picked up their coffee cups, and moved to the center table, leaving theirs vacant. As he walked past them, Smoke tipped his hat.
Much obliged, gentlemen.
Smoke turned his back and walked over to take a seat at the vacant table by the window, with his back to the corner. Ma walked over.
Yeah, well, it be, Smoke. It's a little late for breakfast and a mite early for lunch.
How about we compromise? Some eggs, a couple of flapjacks, and a small steak on the side would be excellent.
Elk steak or beef steak? I've got both.
Elk, please.
And to drink? I got some fresh milk just brought in an hour ago.
Ah, that would be great, Ma.
It'll be right out.
While Smoke waited for his food, he built himself a cigarette. More to keep himself awake than because he felt the urge for one. As he bent over the lucifer to light it, he noticed the men he'd talked to at the table stop on their way out of the cafe and talk to a couple of young boys at the far side of the room. One was dressed in black shirt and trousers and had a black leather vest on with silver conchos around the edges as decoration. Smoke noticed he wore a brace of pearl-handed Colt peacemakers on his hips and had them tied down low on his leg. When the boy, who couldn't have been more than 18 or 19, stared over at him, Smoke knew there was going to be trouble.
Damn, I knew I shouldn't have given my right name.
Ma appeared from the kitchen with a tall glass of milk in one hand and a platter of biscuits in the other. She put them on Smoke's table.
Here you go, Smoke. You can nibble on these till that steak is done. Won't be long.
Who is that at that table over there, Ma?
That there is Trouble. Trouble with a capital T. He calls himself the Silver Kid, and he's always going around trying to pick fights with someone so he can show how fast he is with those six guns on his hips.
And his friend?
Oh, he's Buck Johansson. He follows the other one around like a lapdog, trying to act as tough as his friend, but he ain't near as mean as he tries to make out.
While Smoke was listening to Ma, he saw the Silver Kid approaching out of the corner of his eye.
Better get back in the kitchen, Ma. I think there's gonna be trouble.
Before she could reply, the Silver Kid brushed her aside and stood in front of Smoke with his hands on his hips.
I just can't hardly believe it, boys. The great Smoke Jensen drinking milk like a little bitty baby.
Smoke leaned back, loosening the hammer thong on his right-hand Colt under the table, straightening out his right leg so he could draw faster if he needed to.
And you are?
I'm known as the Silver Kid.
Smoke noticed the kid's friend standing behind him and a little off to one side, sweat trickling down his face. He clearly wanted no part of this.
Well, kid, that's funny, because I've never heard of you.
Well, everybody's gonna know my name after I kill Smoke Jensen.
How old are you, son?
I'm almost 19.
That's good age. Be a shame if you don't live to see it.
Oh, I'll live to see it, Jensen. It's you that's gonna die today.
Maybe. But let me show you something first, all right?
Show me what?
Smoke got to his feet and faced the boy, his hands out in front of him at waist level.
Hold your hands like this.
Why?
Just do it. I won't hurt you.
The kid blushed, but he did as Smoke asked, his hands out a foot or so apart. Smoke clapped his hands together.
Now, do that, fast as you can.
The kid smirked and slapped his hands together.
Now, do it again, faster this time.
The kid did it, but this time, so fast no one even saw his hands move, Smoke drew his right hand Colt and had it out and cocked so that the boy's hands clapped on it.
Oh, Jesus!
The kid's face paled at the speed of Smoke's draw.
You want to try it one more time?
Smoke holstered his Colt. The kid nodded and spread his hands closer together this time. Smoke nodded and the boy moved. But this time, Smoke drew his left-hand gun and had it between the kid's hands before they could come together. Now it was the kid's face that had sweat trickling down off his forehead.
I have an idea. Why don't you boys join me and I'll buy you some breakfast?
Buck Johansson nodded and slapped the kid on the shoulder.
Well, gee, that'd be great, Mr. Jensen.
Call me Smoke, Buck.
The two boys took seats at Smoke's table, and everyone else went back to their eating. Ma came out of the kitchen with a large platter with Smoke's food on it and gave him a wink as she put it on the table.
I think we're gonna need some more eggs and steak, Ma. These are grown boys and they need some good grub.
Golly, Smoke, I ain't never seen nobody as fast as that before.
Fast is overrated, kid. Accuracy is what counts when you're facing a man that wants to kill you. Being able to put that first bullet where it'll do the most good is what keeps a man forked and down instead of the other way around.
The rest of the breakfast was spent with the boys asking Smoke questions about what it was like in the old days. Something that made Smoke laugh, and at the same time, it made him wish he was 20 years younger and still back up in the mountains with Preacher. Still, he did his best around mouthfuls of food to give the boys some idea of what it had been like back when white men were as rare in the high lonesome as hen's teeth. He told them of Preacher, a man who'd spent his entire adult life living alone in the mountains until he took Smoke under his wing as his adopted son and had them laughing until they cried at tales of Puma Buck and Bear Tooth, Powder Pete and Deadhead, men who lived life to the fullest and still had time to laugh at the vagaries of life in the mountains of Colorado Territory.
You ever keep in touch with any of those men, Smoke?
I still see a few of the younger ones, boys, though most are in their 70s or 80s. Unfortunately, their way of life has just about passed away with the ones who've died. There are just too many people around now, and the Indians who still live in the mountains have been so corrupted by the white man's ways that it just isn't the same anymore.
When they finished eating, he got up and shook the boys' hands.
Let me give you some advice, boys. Killing a man, taking from him all that he has or ever will have, is not something to wish for. Once you've done that, you'll never be the same. You can live with it if it's forced on you, and you don't have a choice in the matter. But if you go out looking for it for no good reason other than to build a reputation, it sours something deep inside you, and you'll regret it for the rest of your lives. You'll be as dead inside as that man you planted in Boot Hill.
When Smoke pulled a wad of cash out of his pocket and peeled a couple of bills off the top to give to Ma for their breakfast, he didn't notice a group of four men sitting at a table nearby, watching. One of the men, a hard case named Jeremiah Jones, punched the man next to him with his elbow.
Hey, Willie, would you look at the size of that man's stash?
Willie Boatman, Bob Causey, and Sam Bottoms, Jones's partners in a failed mining venture, had been in the surrounding mountains for almost a year and had little to show for their efforts. They'd come to Colorado Territory expecting to find gold lying around for the taking, with very little knowledge of how and where to dig for it. Desperate now, down to their last few dollars and unable to find anyone who would stake them to another try, they'd been talking about trying to rob a store or a bank. But they had as little knowledge about that as they did about how to go about finding honest work. Willie nodded, his eyes hard.
How about we follow him and see if maybe he'll agree to share some of that with us?
Sure, we shouldn't have no problems with it being four again one.
Smoke walked back to the hotel, with the four men following a short distance behind.
Is my bath ready?
Sure is, mister. I got that water so hot you can take a steam bath if you want to.
Smoke handed him a dollar.
Thanks for your trouble. I'll leave my things in my room while I bathe. Could you have a boy take my horses over to the livery and get them some grain and a good rubdown?
Oh, sure thing, Mr. Jensen. Your room is 312 up on the third floor. Same floor as the bath.
Smoke dropped his saddlebags and the larger bag containing his supplies and extra weapons on his bed. Then he locked the door and went looking for the bathtub down the hall. Smoke found the room and tested the water in the tub with his hand. True to the proprietor's word, the water was steaming hot, and there was a pile of towels, a bar of soap, and a bath brush on a chair next to it, ready for his use. Smoke stripped out of his clothes, hanging them along with his gun belt on a peg on the wall next to the door. Out of long-time habit, he took one of his Colts from its holster and placed it under one of the towels. Then he slipped into the hot water. He leaned his head back against the tub and closed his eyes, luxuriating in the feeling. Jeremiah Jones took out his pistol and knocked on the door to room 312.
Damn. I told you he was going to take a bath.
We could kick the door in.
Nah, he's probably got his money with him anyway. Let's just go find him and get it.
They eased down the hall, walking on tiptoe so as not to warn Smoke of their approach. When they got to the room with a hand-painted sign on it that read Bath, Jones held his gun out in front of him and opened the door. At the sound of the door opening, Smoke opened his eyes and sat up in the tub, letting his right hand hang over the side next to the pile of towels. He smiled when he saw the hard-looking men enter, each with a pistol in their hands.
Sorry, gentlemen, this bath is already spoken for.
Shut your mouth, asshole! We didn't come for no bath!
I can see that, though it might be a good idea for you to take one. You all smell like you've been sleeping with skunks.
Where's the money, you some bitch?
Oh, you mean my money?
No, I mean our money.
Drop them guns and get your hands in the air!
As the men turned to look over their shoulders, Smoke pulled his .44 out from under the towel. All four of the men pointed their guns at the unseen void. Smoke shot Jones in the side of his head, the bullet entering just above his ear and blowing half his head and all of his brains all over the men standing behind him. Causey and Bottom, still standing out in the hallway, were both hit at the same time. Smoke shot Boatman in the neck. Smoke stood up, still holding his Colt out in front of him, until he found out who was in the hall. A young man's grinning face appeared in the doorway. It was the Silver Kid.
Howdy, Smoke.
Smoke just shook his head and smiled.
I'm mighty glad to see you, kid.
Smoke put his pistol down and wrapped himself in one of the large hotel towels as he stepped out of the bathtub.
After you left Ma's place, I noticed these galoots following you. I figured they might be up to no good, so I trailed along to see what they was up to.
Well, I'm sure glad you did.
When I saw them at the door, I thought they had the drop on you, so I drew down on them.
That was mighty brave of you, kid, to take on four men by yourself.
I didn't have no choice, Smoke. I didn't know you had that six killer with you in the bathtub.
Still, it was a very dangerous thing for you to do, kid. Not many men would take on four armed desperados to help out a stranger.
Hell, Smoke, you ain't a stranger. You're my friend.
You got that right, kid.
Just then, the proprietor ran up the hallway, a shotgun in his hands. He just stood there, the shotgun hanging in his hands, as he stared open-mouthed at the dead bodies littering the hallway and the blood pooling on the wooden floor.
Say, after you get someone to haul this trash away, would you heat me up some more water? This batch has gotten kind of cold.
Cal and Pearlie rode into Canyon City in the middle of a snowstorm. After finding a stable for the horses, the men went to the Palace Hotel to get a room for the evening. 20 minutes later, Cal and Pearlie were sitting in a large dining room ordering steaks and fried potatoes.
Oh, and bring us a large pot of coffee. We need something to get the chill out of our bones.
After the waiter went off to get their food, Cal wrapped his arms around his shoulders.
Oh, you know, Pearlie, living like we do down at the Sugarloaf, I about near forgot how cold it gets in the mountains.
I ain't been this cold since Smoke took us up in the High Lonesome a couple years ago to show us how he and Preacher used to live.
It's funny how the cold never seems to bother Smoke none.
I guess his blood must have gotten thick after all those years he spent up there with Preacher and the other mountain men.
The waiter reappeared with a pot of coffee and two thick mugs. Pearlie cut a big slice of bread and spread a thick helping of preserves on it.
Ooh, boy, that hits the spot.
Is it as good as Miss Sally's?
Of course not, Cal. You know nobody's as good a cook as Miss Sally. But it ain't all that bad, neither.
After the waiter brought their meal, the boys ate and discussed their plans to buy the supplies on the list Smoke had given them. Cal, who could read better than Pearlie, went down the list while Pearlie stuffed his face.
I can see why Smoke would want most of this stuff, like the guns and ammo and explosives. Some of it's a mystery to me.
Like what?
Well, take for instance, these picks and shovels and empty tin cans and this barrel of horseshoe nails and a bale of barbed wire. You'd think from this Smoke was planning on doing some mining or stringing up some fences or something.
I don't know.
What about the 50 tent stakes on here? You know, Smoke never sleeps in no tents. He's always making a lean-to shelter out of pine branches and such.
Now, cowboy, you know whatever's on that list Smoke made. He's got a use in mind for it. Let's just get it and worry about what he wants it for later.
Smoke Jensen was up and on the trail before dawn, feeling refreshed and rested after a good 12-hour sleep in the hotel in Silver Cliff. He headed south out of the town toward the pass between the Crestone Peak and Deer Peak Mountains. He knew that the outlaws who'd kidnapped Sally would have to travel through the pass to get to either Canyon City or Pueblo, since the mountains were too high for inexperienced men to cross this time of the year. He hoped to get there ahead of them, but he knew it was going to be close. If they were traveling fast, they might have already gone through the pass, in which case he'd be able to pick up their trail through the snow that had been falling for the past few days. In fact, Bill Pike had been pushing his men hard. He wanted to get to Pueblo a few days ahead of Smoke Jensen so he'd be able to pick a campsite that would be easily defended and remote enough so Jensen couldn't expect any help from the local authorities. They'd reached the pass between Crestone and Deer Peaks the night before and had elected to camp there until morning. Both his men and their horses were exhausted from the effort to climb up to the pass, being unused to both the thin air of the mountains and the extreme cold temperatures. When the outlaws woke up, they were grumpy and tired and breathing heavily even with the slightest exertion. A large fire was built, and Bill encouraged them to eat as much as they could to fortify them against the cold. Joe Rutledge, called Sarge because of his stint in the Army until he'd been cashiered for stealing Army horses and selling them to settlers and Indians, moved closer to the fire and held his hands out close to the flames, trying to get them warm.
Oh, Jesus, Bill, I'm about near freezing my balls off up in these mountains.
A couple of the other men nodded sympathetically. All of them had coats and clothes more suited to the tropical climate of South Texas and Mexico, where they'd worked for the past couple of years.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Sarge. I checked the map last night. We're gonna be going near Canyon City tomorrow. We'll send some men in to get some warmer clothes and more supplies when we get close enough.
Sally kept her head down to hide her smile at the outlaws' discomfort. Even though she was wearing only one set of clothes and had only a poncho to keep her warm, she was more used to the cold and wasn't particularly bothered by the temperatures.
Well, just what do you think we should do until then?
I'd suggest you put on every bit of clothes you have in your saddlebags, Blackie. It's about all we can do until we get some warmer clothes.
Hank Snow sat on the ground near the fire and put his boots almost into the coals.
I can't hardly feel my feet, Bill. Suppose I'm getting frostbite?
Yeah. Slip them boots off. Let me take a look.
Sally glanced up from across the fire.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Pike looked over at her, a scowl on his face.
And why not, Mrs. Jensen?
Sally got to her feet and moved over to Pike.
Because, Mr. Pike, if his feet are that cold, when he takes his boots off, they're going to swell up. He probably won't be able to get them back on then.
What do you suggest, ma'am?
Get your feet as warm as you can by the fire. Just before we leave, cut a couple of strips off your ground sheet and wrap them around your boots. That should keep them warm and dry enough until we stop for lunch and build another fire.
Well, who said we're going to stop for lunch? I want to make Canyon City by tomorrow.
Sally glanced over at the horses, which were standing in a group with their heads down, pawing at the snow, looking for grass to eat.
Mr. Pike, it's not up to me to tell you your business, but unless you want to walk the rest of the way to Canyon City, you're going to need to let those horses rest some. I noticed you didn't bring any grain for them to eat, and the grass up here is under 2 feet of snow. Also, they're not used to the air up here. If you continue to push them as hard as you have been, they'll flounder by nightfall.
Why are you trying to help us, Mrs. Jensen? Are you just trying to slow us down so your husband can catch us before we get to Pueblo?
Oh, Mr. Pike, it will do me no good if smoke catches up to us after we've frozen to death because you managed to kill our horses, will it? I'll tell you for a fact, Mr. Pike. A man on foot up in these mountains is as good as dead. If those horses die, you'll be frozen solid within 24 hours.
It's making good sense, boss. My horse ain't had nothing to eat since yesterday.
I see what you mean, Mrs. Jensen. Rufus, you and Sarge take your shovels and dig up some of that snow so them horses can find some grass while we eat breakfast. And then we'll do the same thing when we take our nooning.
Sally smiled to herself. Though she'd been telling the men the truth, she also knew that by now, Smoke was on their trail, and anything she did to slow him down made it easier for him to catch up to him. She sat down next to the fire and nursed her coffee. When she saw Bill Pike building himself a cigarette, She got an idea.
Mr. Pike, do you suppose I could have one of those?
You smoke, Mrs. Jensen?
Just occasionally, when I'm very cold.
He handed her the cigarette he'd made and began to make himself another one. Sally took the cigarette, reached into the edge of the fire, and got a burning twig to light it with. When no one was looking, she used the charcoal end of the stick to write Canyon City on the hem of her dress when the men weren't looking. After a few minutes, she stood up and began to move toward the bushes a short distance from the campfire.
Where are you going, Mrs. Jensen?
Well, I need to...
Uh-oh. All right, go ahead.
You need some help, ma'am?
No, thank you. I can manage.
Once she was out of sight in the bushes, she bent down, tore off the part of her dress with the words Canyon City written on it, and stuffed it in the front of her dress where it couldn't be seen. An hour later, after both the horses and the men had eaten their fill, Pike broke camp. As the men began to get up on their horses, Sally quickly placed a piece of dress under one of the campfire stones before she got on her horse. As Pike led his men down through the pass toward the distant Canyon City, Sally glanced back over her shoulder at the message she'd left for Smoke, hoping it wouldn't be covered by the light snow that was beginning to fall. Later that afternoon, when Smoke got to the pass, he found the campfire cold and most of the tracks of the men covered with snow. He knew from the horse droppings there had been at least 8 or more horses, but he couldn't tell which direction they'd taken down out of the pass. If they went northwest, they were heading toward Canyon City. If they were northeast, then they were going directly to Pueblo. As he knelt by the fire, touching the coals to try and determine how far behind him he was, he noticed a scrap of gingham cloth sticking out from under one of the stones around the coals. He pulled it out, and then he grinned when he recognized Sally's dress cloth. He was relieved to see that she was still alive. As he examined the cloth, he noticed it had something scrawled on it. He held it up to the light and read the words.
Canyon City.
Smoke smiled and shook his head. Sally had managed to let him know where the men were headed, and she'd done it right under their noses.
The poor sons of bitches didn't know who they were dealing with when they took Sally prisoner.
Judging from the coldness of the coals, he figured he was at least 12 hours behind the men. Well, he'd just give his horses some of the grain he'd brought along, fix himself a small fire to heat up some coffee, and have a cold breakfast. And then he'd be on his way. If he pushed it, he could make up at least 4 hours on the men by nightfall. While he ate the last of the turkey Mrs. Wiley had given him and drank his coffee, Smoke hoped Cal and Pearlie were getting the supplies he'd asked for. With any luck, they'd be ready and waiting for him when he got to Canyon City. If that were the case, then they would probably be able to catch up with the group of outlaws before they made it to Pueblo. Smoke's jaws clenched when he thought of what he was gonna do to them if they harmed one hair on Sally's head. Cal and Pearlie awoke after a good night's sleep in the Palace Hotel.
Oh, man!
Pearlie was glancing across the room at the other bed where Cal was just opening his eyes.
That sure felt good to have a real feather mattress under my butt instead of the cold hard ground.
The boys, though they had plenty of cash for 2 rooms, were of such a nature that they hated to waste money unnecessarily. Besides, after sleeping in bunkhouses for most of their lives, they were used to someone else snoring nearby and probably wouldn't have been able to get to sleep in a quiet room.
Yeah, and I have a feeling we better enjoy the feeling, because once we leave here, it's going to mean sleeping out in the snow.
Pearlie jumped out of bed and began to put his clothes on.
Time to get going, cowboy. I think I can hear breakfast calling my name.
Cal rolled over and covered his head with the blankets.
You go on, Pearlie. I want to catch another few winks.
All right, that's the way you want it. But remember, after today, all we're going to have to eat is our own cooking.
That threat did it. Cal rolled over out of bed. He and Pearlie were spoiled living on the sugar loaf. Sally Jensen was one of the best cooks in the county, and Cal and Pearly weren't used to trail food. Greasy, fat-backed bacon and boiled beans just could not compare to Sally's fried chicken and mashed potatoes and corn and such. While Cal and Pearly were eating breakfast, Bill Pike and his men arrived at the outskirts of Canyon City. Pike reined in his horse and looked down at the town sitting in a small valley below him.
We gonna get to go into town and have a few drinks? Get me some laudanum for my hand?
No, I don't think there's gonna be any drinking in town, boys. I don't want us to draw any attention to ourselves until we know for sure where Smoke Jensen is.
Boss, I ain't had a drink since we got to Colorado. And I done forgot what it's like to have a woman on my lap.
Don't forget who's running this outfit, Hank, or it might be the last thing you ever forget.
Hank clamped his lips shut and looked down at the ground.
Now, I'll stay out here with Mrs. Jensen. The rest of you can go into town and buy the supplies we need, and you can get yourselves a couple of bottles of whiskey if you want, but I don't want you drinking it in town. Wait until we make camp tonight. And you, Roof, if there's a dock in town, you might want to have him take a look at that hand. Maybe he can fix it so it don't hurt so bad.
Anything special you want us to get in the way of supplies, boss?
Yeah, Blackie. Get some warm clothes and a heavy coat for Mrs. Jensen. I don't want her freezing to death before we meet up with her husband. And you might want to pick up some heavier coats for the rest of us, too. We're going to be going up into the mountains, and it's bound to get colder the higher we get. And pick up some more ammunition, just in case Jensen brings help with him and makes a fight of it.
You think you'll do that after you told him you'd kill his wife if he didn't come alone?
I don't know. What do you think, Mrs. Jensen?
Smoke won't need any help to kill you men, and he probably won't even break a sweat doing it.
You think he's that tough?
You can't imagine just how tough, but you'll find out soon enough. And you men had better take some time to enjoy the town while you're there, because it is liable to be the last town you visit while you're still alive.
Get on into town, boys. Get those supplies. And don't forget, I'll shoot any man who comes back here drunk.
Cal and Pearly had finished breakfast and were in the general store picking out the supplies Smoke had written on his list when a group of hard-looking men walked into the room. As the men spread out and began to gather supplies of their own, one of the men walked up to the store owner behind the counter.
You got any women's clothes here?
Cal's face got hard and his hand moved toward the butt of his pistol until Pearly put a hand on his arm.
Careful.
The store owner nodded.
Yeah, I got some pants and shirts that ought to fit a woman, but I don't have no fancy dresses or nothing like that.
Pants and shirts will be all right. She's about this tall, and she's built thin, not real heavy.
The store owner walked to a rack of clothes on one wall and began to pick out trousers, flannel shirts, and some long-handle underwear.
Oh, and she's gonna need a heavy coat, too.
Pearly motioned to Cal with his head and walked out of the store, leaving their supplies in a pile near the counter.
That's gotta be Miss Sally is talking about.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, remember, Smoke said to do nothing to draw attention to ourselves, so don't you go off all half-cocked until Smoke gets here.
You know, we can't just let him ride out of town without doing something.
We are gonna do something. I'm gonna follow him and see which way they're headed and make sure Miss Sally's all right.
Yeah, but what am I supposed to do?
Pearly handed him the wad of cash Smoke had given him.
Well, you get the rest of the supplies on the list and take it over to the hotel. Then go to the livery and pick us up a pack horse to carry it on. Once I see where they're going, I'll come back to town and get you.
And what if Smoke isn't here by then?
Well, I don't know. We'll just have to figure something out when time comes.
As soon as Cal moved back toward the general store, Pearly took off at a dead run for the hotel. He knew if he was going to follow the kidnappers up into the mountains, he needed to get prepared. Blackie Johnson stepped up to the counter at the general store and waited patiently while the owner totaled up their purchases. While he was waiting, he noticed a young man nearby also gathering up a load of supplies. Blackie smiled and nodded to the fella.
Looks like you're going to be doing some mining up in the mountains.
Cal, startled by the man's words and somewhat surprised at the congeniality of the outlaw, nodded.
Yeah, my partner and I plan to give it a try.
Blackie glanced out of the window at the gray day.
Mighty poor weather to be going up in the mountains.
Cal shrugged and inclined his head at the pile of heavy coats and other clothing on the counter in front of the man.
Looks like that's where you're headed, too.
Yeah, but we're just passing through. Not planning on staying too long. We're from Texas, and it don't get that cold down there.
Zeke Thompson sidled up next to Johnson and stared suspiciously at Cal. He glanced at Blackie with a frown on his face.
You gonna jaw all day or you gonna get our gear ready?
Blackie stared back at Thompson, not giving an inch. He did not like the man, and he made no pretense to.
I'll pay up when the clerk has the total ready. You got a problem with that, Zeke?
Zeke cut his eyes at Cal.
Don't get testy, Blackie, but there's no need to discuss our business with every stranger you meet.
Blackie reached over to the counter and picked up a bottle of whiskey Thompson had gotten off the shelf.
Here, Zeke, pour yourself a drink. Looks like you need one.
Damned if I don't.
Thompson took the bottle and limped off toward the door.
Sorry about my friend. He ain't too personable.
Well, I can see why. That leg of his must ache something fierce in this cold weather. I busted a knee once when I was herding beeves, and it still hurts in cold weather.
I suppose so. My guess is he's just an asshole. He don't need no excuse to be snake mean.
The owner of the store handed Blackie a piece of paper with a list of their supplies and how much it cost. Blackie looked it over, then he pulled out a wad of bills, counted out the correct amount, and handed it to the clerk.
Much obliged.
Hey, boys, come and get this stuff so we can head back to camp. Hank, you think you could go see if Rufus is through with that doctor? I want to make sure he don't stop off at any saloons before he heads back here.
After they'd gathered up their supplies, Blackie tipped his hat to Cal.
Good luck to you with your mining, mister.
Thanks. And I hope you get where you're going to without freezing your balls off.
Me too.
After the men in the store gathered up their order and left, Cal stepped to the door and watched them load their supplies and begin to walk their horses out of town. A few minutes later, Pearlie could be seen riding past the store, following the men at a discreet distance. He glanced over at Cal standing in the doorway and winked and tipped his hat. Cal grinned and went back to the counter where he proceeded to fill the rest of the orders Smoke had given him. When he had it all stacked up on the counter, the owner of the store shook his head as he totaled the bill.
You and your partner must be planning to do a lot of blasting with all this powder.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than using a pick and shovel.
That it is. But one thing, though, I don't know as you're going to need all these shells. The Indians haven't been giving the miners any trouble for some time now.
It's just that my partner and I like to be prepared for whatever may happen.
Looks to me like you're ready for the next war.
Cal counted out the correct amount from the cash Pearlie had given him.
Here you go. You mind if I leave this stuff here for a while until I can get me a pack horse from the livery?
Not at all, son. I'll just pile it over here in the corner until you come back.
In less than an hour, Cal had purchased a pack horse from the livery man, loaded up their supplies, and taken the animal back to the livery, where he unpacked the boxes and bags of powder, stakes, nails, and cartridges, and piled them in the stall where the livery man had his horse stored. Then he went back to the hotel to wait for Smoke to come. It was mid-afternoon, and Cal was lying on the bed taking a nap when the door opened and Smoke walked in. Cal jumped to his feet and rushed over to shake Smoke's hand.
Oh, Jiminy, I'm glad to see you, Smoke.
Smoke nodded and smiled, and Cal could see he was dead tired from his time on the trail.
Any word on the kidnappers?
Oh, yeah, there was a group of them here this morning. They bought some supplies at the store, and Pearlie and me followed them out of town.
They didn't have Sally with them.
Yeah, no. They must have left a couple of men with her so nobody would see her when they came to town.
Which way did they go when they left town?
Yeah, that way.
Cal pointed to the northeast. Smoke nodded.
Then they're headed to Pueblo, like they said they were.
Smoke, you look like you could use some food and a lie down.
Yeah, I've been pushing it pretty hard trying to catch up to them. Is the food any good here?
Yeah, Pearlie thinks so.
Oh, Pearlie would eat anything that didn't eat him first. Come on, let's get some grub and then I'll get some shut-eye. If Pearlie's not back in a few hours, we'll head out on our own down the trail toward Pueblo.
They went down to the dining room and ordered some food and a large pot of coffee. While they were waiting for the food to be cooked, Smoke told Cal about his trip following the men and the note Sally had written on a piece of her dress, telling him where they were headed.
Miss Sally is too smart for them glutes.
That's for sure.
When they finished eating, Smoke called the waiter over to the table. Smoke had the waiter wrap up 5 fried chickens. Then they headed back toward their rooms.
Why'd you do that?
If we're going to be following those men up in the mountains, we're not going to be able to make a fire big enough to cook out without it being seen. So I wanted us to have something we could eat cold.
Oh.
Wake me up in 4 hours, whether Pearlie's here or not.
Cal woke Smoke up, and they were ready to leave just before nightfall. On the way out of the hotel, Smoke told the desk clerk to tell Pearlie they were on the trail heading toward Pueblo, in case he returned after they left. By the time they got the pack horse loaded up and were on their way, it was full dark, and a light snow was starting to fall.
That's good. The clouds and snow will keep the temperatures from falling too low in the high country.
It'll help us track the kidnappers, too.
That's true. If they try to get off the trail, but I suspect they're pilgrims, and will stay on the road so they won't get lost in the mountains.
Are you familiar with this part of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, Smoke?
Pretty much. Preacher and I used to hunt the area back in the old days. There were plenty of beaver and foxes back then. Not like now when the miners have hunted them out.
You think there are any mountain men still up here nowadays?
Well, I suppose there may be a few. Some of the younger men are left. But even they're getting up there in age by now.
It was getting close to midnight when Smoke's horse pricked up its ears. Smoke reined to a halt and held up his hand.
Quiet, Cal. Joker smells someone coming.
Since they were heading northeast and the wind was out of the north, the smells of anyone on the trail ahead of them would be carried downwind toward them. Smoke pulled Joker's head around and led Cal off the trail and into the heavy bushes nearby. A few minutes later, a dark form, hunched over his horse's head, could be seen moving down the trail toward him. When he came abreast of him, Smoke spurred Joker out onto the trail.
Evening, Pearlie.
Howdy, Pearlie. Whew, you boys about scared me out of 10 years' growth.
What news of the kidnappers?
They're camped for the night, about 5 miles up the trail.
And Sally?
Well, looks like they're treating her all right, Smoke. I got close enough to make sure she was doing all right. Nobody bothering her or nothing. And then I headed back this way to meet up with you and Cal.
So, they're not treating her badly then?
No, in fact, they even bought her some heavy clothes, coats and such, so she wouldn't get too cold on the trip through the mountains.
I'll be sure and thank the bastards right before I kill them.
You want me to lead you to them?
Do they have any sentries out?
Yeah, 2 men, 1 north, 1 south.
Well, there's no hurry then.
Smoke pulled Joker's head around and rode off the trail toward a group of boulders nearby.
Let's make a fire, eat some coffee, and give them time to get settled in and the sentries to get sleepy.
Fire sounds damn good. You got any food to cook? I'm about starved to death.
No time for that, but we do have some fried chicken if you don't mind eating it cold.
Cold? Hell. I'll eat it raw if it's all you got.
After Smoke built a hat-sized fire up next to the boulders where the light couldn't be seen from more than a few feet away, Cal filled the coffee pot with snow and melted it on the fire, adding a double handful of Arbuckle's coffee once the water was boiling. After a few minutes, the delightful aroma of fresh-boiled coffee swirled in the air. Pearlie was so hungry that he couldn't wait for the coffee to be ready. He dug into Cal's saddlebags and pulled out one of the packets of fried chicken wrapped in wax paper. He carried it over to the tiny fire and sat cross-legged on a stone nearby while he unwrapped the food and began to eat. Cal handed him a tin cup, full to the brim with the strong coffee.
Hey, Pearlie, save a little of that chicken for smoking me.
Hand me a couple of those legs, will you?
I'll take a breast.
Pearlie, who would just about eat any part of a chicken except the feathers and feet, pulled the package back and handed out the meat, preferring to remain in control of that delicious food. After he took a few bites and washed them down with the coffee, he looked over at Smoke.
Ooh, this is right good chicken. Well, it don't compare to Miss Sally's.
That'd sure be nice to have a handful of Miss Sally's bear sign for dessert.
It would be even nicer to have Sally here with us now.
When they'd finished eating and had built cigarettes to enjoy with the last of the coffee, Smoke began to outline his plan of attack on the kidnappers.
First thing we're going to do is find their camp. We shouldn't have to worry too much about noise since the snow will muffle the horses' hoofbeats. But we'll need to make sure anything we're carrying is tied down tight so it won't clatter when we ride up close.
Well, after we find them, what do you want us to do?
I'm going to go in close while you boys hang back. I want to make sure Sally's all right. If I see she's in no danger of being treated badly, then I'll come back out to you and we'll see if we can take out the sentries without risking any noise.
Furley pulled out his skinning knife and held it up so the fire reflected off the blade.
That shouldn't be a problem.
No, Pearly. I want to take them alive if we can.
Why?
Because I want to ask them some questions about exactly where the outlaws are headed and why they decided to take her in the first place. Put out the fire, boys. It's time to get back on the trail.
It was almost midnight by the time Smoke and his boys approached the kidnappers' camp. Smoke could see and smell the huge campfire from over a mile away, so he knew they were getting close. When he saw the glow of the fire over a ridge, he told Cal and Pearly to stay with the horses. Then he got down out of the saddle and crept over the ridge on foot, keeping well off the trail and into the brush surrounding the camp. As he got closer, he got down on his belly and crawled through the forest until he was no more than 30 yards from the fire. He counted 9 bodies sprawled close to the fire, bundled up in blankets and lying on rubber ground sheets to keep dry. One of the figures was a little away from the others, and he could tell it was Sally by the long, dark hair spilling out from under the blankets, which she had up to her forehead to keep warm. He saw a rope leading out from under the blankets that was tied to a nearby tree. Evidently, the bastards had tied Sally's hands or arm to the tree to keep her from trying to escape during the night. Actually, he thought that was a good sign. If they'd harmed her significantly, they wouldn't be worried about her being able to make an escape. So she must be in pretty good shape, considering what she'd been through. Smoke lay perfectly still, not moving at all. He knew from the number of bodies he counted that there were probably 2 sentries somewhere near the camp. He figured sooner or later they would make some movement, showing him where they were. Pilgrims in cold weather like this were unable to stay perfectly still while sitting sentry duty, and they would eventually move around to try and keep warm. Sure enough, in a short while, he saw the flare of a lucifer off to one side as one of the sentries lit a cigarette or cigar. He made a mental note of his location and continued to let his eyes move around the periphery of the camp, searching for the other sentry's location. His patience was rewarded after a few minutes when a moving shadow on the other side of the camp caught his eye. The man was walking in short circles, flapping his arms to his chest to get warm. Smoke shook his head and grinned to himself. These men were obviously dumber than dirt. The only value of a sentry is stealth. If the enemy knows the sentry's location, then he's worthless. A fact that was either not known by these men, or that was being ignored out of a sense of security or boredom. With their positions fixed firmly in his mind, Smoke slowly crawled back away from the camp until it was safe for him to get to his feet. Then he jogged back to where he'd left Cal and Pearly and the horses. When he got there, he drew a crude map of the camp in the snow with a stick, making the positions of the sentries.
Now, here's what we're gonna do. Cal, you and Pearly will ease up on the man on this side of the camp, because he'll be the easiest to get to without making any noise. Once you get to him, take him down with the butt of your pistol and make sure he doesn't make any noise when he falls. Then you bring him back here and make him comfortable. Until I get back.
You gonna take that other guard by yourself?
Yeah. It's gonna be a little more difficult to get him without him hearing me because of his position. But I think I can do it. If it looks like it'll make too much noise for me to take him, I'll just come back here, and we'll try to get our information from the man you two get. Good luck, boys. And remember, Sally's life depends on you not letting them hear you.
Sam Kane felt as if his feet and hands were frozen blocks of ice. Even though he'd had some experience with Blue Northers down in Texas, he had never seen weather so cold as this before. He pulled the cork from his canteen with shaking hands, and he took a swallow of the coffee he'd filled it with earlier.
Jeez, that tasted good.
He tried to build himself a cigarette, but his hands were shaking so much he'd spilled more tobacco than he'd got in the paper. He twisted the ends of the paper and stuck the butt in his mouth. Bending over against the wind, he struck a lucifer and lit the cigarette. Just then, he caught a movement out of the corner of his eye, and he turned his head just as the butt of a rifle crashed down on his skull.